Today's episode is brought to you by Slay House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
It's broken.
That's pretty great.
Well, yeah. It's the end of the year. We've had a pretty good run.
Yeah.
It's all over.
It's all over, guys.
Not quite, because actually the season's going to spill into January of 2022.
That's right. We do have some content planned for
kind of like if you missed the lid.
Yeah.
And
we're kind of planning. Oh, no. Are we going there?
It's the year in review. We have to
reel it in.
What is a year in review without talking about asparagus?
Oh, no.
I'm the one that started the Punday Monday and have like puns every Monday on Twitter. And he's surprised by me wanting to go to the pun. I'm telling you, puns are some of the best wordplay. You can't spell punchline without pun.
You know, I originally crafted this theory of clowns. I promise it's not as much of a tangent as you think.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, no, clowns.
In honor
clowns
of our year in review,
episode. For a long time, I was trying to wrap my head around, like, why am I so fearful of clowns? Because a clown shows up and I lose my shit every time.
Wow.
Yeah, really. It's,
he
it's
does.
A,
it really
it's
stinks.
A really
you can't be around
deal.
Them.
It's a big deal. Yeah. So, I created this theory of, like, why are clowns so terrifying? I think what happens is, like, these people get abducted by aliens, and then they're replaced by imperfect clones. And how do you hide that the clone is kind of, like, messed up a little bit, but you put on, like, thick, garish makeup? These aliens also don't have a great command over the English language, which is why they emphasize pun humor so much, because they believe that the pinnacle of English language mastery is a pun. So how do you prove to people that you know
that's debatable
their language
they
so
might
well?
Be right, though.
You just make dozens of puns.
I think understanding the English language enough to where you can make those puns and those play on words, especially if you can do it like in the instant or in the moment, I think that actually is a good understanding of the English language. Even if you can't say
tangential.
So only the most linguistically skilled among us can do puns.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Like I told you guys.
This is such a great save for you.
It is. I told you guys my best two puns came when I was teaching. Like I caught a coworker in a pun one time. She asked me if I had a drill. Did I tell you guys this story?
No.
So she asked me if I had a drill, and she was trying to get a 2x4 to break, because you know the most of the desks you get in like those old teachers' offices are like these old particle board kind of cheap desks, mm-hmm. right? So she needed to put a one of those devices where you could put your computer and stuff on it and raise it up so you could stand instead of sit while you're working and typing at your desk.
Yeah.
But the desk isn't strong enough to support that. So she bought a couple of 2x4s and had them cut to size, and she was trying to brace up the desk so that it could support the weight of this device. So she asked me if I had a drill. And in that moment, the pun came to me. And I said, I don't have a drill. I said, but I'm going home this weekend to visit my grandfather, and he's got an awl. And I said, what do you need this drill for anyway? And she's like, well, I put in this work order for the fiscal plan to come and help me brace this boards up, but they haven't responded and I'm tired of waiting on them. And I said, all right, well, let me go see if I can get this awl. And she goes, what's an awl? And I said, an awl is like a drill. It's an old time before they had power drills, like a little corkscrew thing with a drill bit on the end, and you just take it and you drill it in. She's like, I don't know, that sounds like a lot of work. I'll just wait for the fiscal plan. And I said, well, if you're waiting for the fiscal plan, it could be all or nothing.
Holy cow.
She pointed to her door.
Just get the fuck out of here.
Right out of here.
It was just an elaborate setup for that joke.
It was.
I loved it.
I was like, I came up with that on the spur of the moment, you know? And then the next time.
He's not trying to help me at all here. This is all about him.
The next time I was team teaching a creative writing class with another professor, and the professor, we were going through the syllabus on the first day. We had like 20 kids in there. And he goes through all of the different policies and things, and he gets to the makeup policy, and he goes into, you know, well, this is my late policy, this is what it is. And after he's done, he like, whenever he goes over a section, he waited for me to kind of put my two cents in. So after he went in it, I said, my makeup policy is I don't wear any. And the kids just busted up laughing.
The best joke
I think
that's
how you steal thunder.
The best joke I think I've ever delivered in a classroom. I walked in. Jeremy had just quit, and I took over one of his classes. So I come in, and a bunch of kids were expecting Jeremy because they actually signed up for the class knowing that he was going to be teaching it. So I come in, and I stand in front of the podium or whatever, and I said, as many of you know, I am not Mr. Billingsley. He's no longer with us. He's not dead. No, so there was like this dead silence. Everybody, I like left a beat, and everybody was so silent. And I was like, he's not dead. He just quit. And like the one kid in the corner that fucking was my bust up over
as long
it.
As you get that
he,
one.
Yeah. He and I was like, I knew it was a joke. I was walking into it, but everyone, like, it did not play to that
he's
crowd.
He's no longer with us.
Yeah, he's no longer with
how
us.
How many students?
It was like 20 kids.
Okay.
And they were all just mortified. I was like, he's no longer with us.
120.
He's not
okay.
dead.
If it was one of those auditoriums.
I'm claiming.
One, that's a little rough. That's pretty rough.
That was Trevor's joke, but I'm claiming that is my Dead Poets Society moment. That's my oh, captain, my captain moment. I mean, it's
only one kid was. I thought it was funny.
No, you mortified the entire class because they were expecting me and you told them I was dead.
You can hear everybody
that's
going,
right.
Oh.
If you're listening now, students, I'm not dead. I'm just telling bad puns on my own podcast.
he may as well be dead.
All right, so seriously, this is the year in review. No, not seriously. We've never been really serious.
It's
like
hard
even
to
when
be
we
serious.
Get serious, we always come back to the comedy or what like, we call people can't see at home, but I'm air quoting comedy. So
our best interpretation
of Slayhouse Publishing presents Lit Bits. This is
you have gotten better and better at that.
It's because I just don't think about it now.
There you go.
It's like if it's I try to beautiful. Think about it, then I
memory.
Screw it up.
Yeah.
But if I, it's like guitar playing or writing or driving a car. I just don't think.
Just do.
I like
just
that do. You don't think when you drive a car.
That's the worst thing you can do.
I don't think about red lights. I don't think about you.
Maybe I'm bored. Who cares?
Left side, right side. I don't think about any of it.
You want to swerve from lane to lane and, you know, and beat with the music you're listening to? Just do it. Just do it.
It's the road great. Is your canvas.
And I'm a slatter all over.
I call this impressionism.
You should have seen my Picasso.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Year end review. Eventually, we'll actually talk about the year.
We got to talk about the year, I guess. So this year started with us forming the publishing house in spring and getting our first title out.
I like that the year started in spring.
It did.
And not earlier.
This is the Celtic calendar that we're going by, I think. Doesn't the Celtic calendar start in the spring?
This is news to me. I don't know.
You got nothing to add there.
I'm not a
what
great
good are you guys then if you can't back
calendars.
Me up on my bullshit?
Oh, what's the
start
calendar?
Date? What's the start date of this year?
We haven't even talked about Star Trek. Why are you bringing up Star Date?
I don't know. Like just calendars. It's calendar. It's related to calendar.
Any reason to bring up Star Trek though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we spent that whole time talking about Star Wars. Like, does Star Wars have a star date?
No.
How do we know?
It's just a long time ago.
That's pretty vague. I mean, Darth Vader's long time ago could be like 2 weeks to me.
They're not big on timeliness.
Obviously not.
In Star Wars.
Look what they did with the Emperor.
Yeah.
Like, keep bringing his ass back and with a massive weapon.
That could keep going and going and going.
I know.
The questionable choices made.
It probably will.
In the podcast or in Star Wars?
In Star Wars.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the podcast, too. I've said it once. If I've said it once, I've said it before that if it wasn't for our producers at Wayne Howard Studios, we would have the production value of an Ed Wood movie.
I think we should live stream watching that movie. I think that would be a fun episode.
Plan 9 from Outer Space?
Plan 9 from Outer Space.
That really
mic us up.
On,
let's put it on Twitch together. We'll have this communal experience.
Can I be Tom Servo?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Can we show just the back of our head, like, silhouette, and then just the mystery science
thing? Yeah, we're just watching it.
That was great.
Yeah.
Be a good time.
I feel like anytime we try to do anything like that, that's all we're just ripping off Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Of course, yeah.
But there are so many bad movies that are still coming out, we still need to have Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, agreed. Yeah.
So much like the rest of our year in review, instead of talking about the subjects that we need to talk about, we just go off on a wild tangent.
Yeah. The show in a nutshell.
That's what
three
this
guys
year was
go
about.
On tangents for an hour.
It's very...
What were the hallmarks of 2021 for us? Like, what were the things that we can kind of celebrate?
Well, I got a card for my birthday. Oh, not that kind of hallmark.
You mean related to the podcast?
No.
Oh, no. Oh,
we've unleashed.
They tried to stop me, but they can't.
This is the Leviathan over here. Unleash the Kraken of these jokes.
Sorry, everyone.
Or the crapping.
Jeremy's just going to do that. So.
See, this is what happens when I get coffee in me.
Like, this is why we should put him in the isolation box.
And they just cut the mic and the oxygen.
he just thinks he's sucking.
All right.
No, but what can we celebrate from this year?
I mean, the
publishing house started in 2021. That of course
we got
is a
novel
thing.
Out. We got a anthology that's coming out in the next couple of days. By the time this is being recorded,
it's done.
By the time this airs, the anthology is going to be out. So we have published two works of fiction. Mm-hmm. We've got this podcast that has been growing exponentially since we started. It's been a very slight curve. That exponential line has not been as sharp as you might envision, but it has been, you know.
It has grown.
It has.
We do have listeners.
Kind of redefining what that means, I think.
I'm 90% certain only three of those listeners are bots.
Two of them are from Russia.
Two of them are from Russia, yeah. To our Russian listeners, thank you. Hope you're real.
We love our bots.
You know what?
Trevor just told us how bots have figured out how to do CAPTCHA, so who knows?
Yeah. Maybe.
CAPTCHA bots.
It's the
welcome
future.
To the 21st century.
Let's celebrate robotics. Yeah.
And we've got, our podcast, okay, maybe exponentially is, you know, a bit of a hyperbole. But we have trended upward.
No, I mean, you're right. We have seen some growth. We've had, you know, some growth in social media following. We're being followed by
and that
more
has,
people
I would,
than ever
I would
before.
Call that, if I would call anything exponential, I would call the growth in our social media following exponential.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
And then we did the cover reveal, and we had even more followers after that. So
cover was gorgeous. And
so people saw the cover, and yeah. So I think we've done some really great work, and we've established what we want to do and what we want to be as a publishing house, which is... We want to serve our authors. We want to produce quality work from cover to page. We are trying to blend this idea of literary and genre, not just horror, but any kind of literary, any of the other genre kind of fiction like mystery, science fiction, mm-hmm. fantasy. And I think the anthology and even the title that we produced, I think they do a good job of genre blending and elevating the discussion and elevating the story to a literary status. Yeah. I think they're really well written. I think people really responded well to the fact that we are paying attention to students of creative writing before we just mm-hmm. open our doors to everybody.
That was a really interesting choice that we made this year. You know, and I think, again, just speaking to some of the celebration of the year, you know, some stuff to celebrate. I mean, the turnout for our first anthology was really impressive. We mm-hmm. had quite a few submissions. We accepted 15 submissions for mm-hmm. the anthology. And I mean, the caliber of those submissions were really amazing.
They were really good. Really, really. Yeah. Especially if you consider the short amount of time we had to advertise that we had submissions
open. And that was another thing. You know, we opened submissions and it was just, you know, we opened them almost without knowing entirely what we were doing. We just kind of put it out on social media.
I think I finished the website in like September and we had in August, and then we had submissions open in September.
Yeah, and we told a couple of places about it, and then we got quite an impress, almost with no real advance notice, you know. Yeah. we got quite a few submissions, and there were a lot of really high quality submissions in there. And when we talked about it, you know, we talked about opening it to creative writing students in mm-hmm. order to, you know, to try to kind of show this growing community. And it was really great, the stuff that we got from a lot of those creative writing students. It was
and now
really
with our cool. submissions being open in July of 2022, that's just more time mm-hmm. to get that draw and get those people.
And we're already seeing a lot of interest from a lot of writers. I've already
had
there.
Three or four people ignore, I guess, the submissions page and just email me and say, hey, I've got a submission. And I've been like, hey, this is, and I've actually read through them. And I've been like, uh-huh. a couple of people, I've been like, look, this is really, really great. I really like it, but I'm just not open to submissions right now. We've got to have a break. This is when we open.
My hope when stuff like that happens is that
they resubmit
first,
to us.
They understand that, like, we would love to take your submission, but now is not the time. We're not ready
right.
for that, you know, because we plan our projects. We kind of have to plan our projects.
I told my wife yesterday, we were talking about this, and I was like, you know, I would love to be like a big publisher and be on a rolling open submission period, but we just can't. We can't afford it. We can't. Yeah. We can't. We don't have the manpower to man it because I, frankly, doing the anthology, working on my own writing, running the day-to-day for the publishing house, doing the scripts for the podcast, which, believe it or not, folks, I actually do write the scripts for this. It just, we don't always stick to them.
Right.
And
I'm so sorry.
And doing, like, the research for, like, this deep dive we're going to get into with, like, this four-episode mm-hmm. deep dive into, like, Dracula and stuff. I'm doing a ton of research. And quite honestly, I'm exhausted. I need the break. And so...
We need to design some bots that can do these... Types of things for
Hello, I am Jeremy. Yeah. I am your host today for Slay House Publishing. I fucked it up.
No, but my hope is that they submit to us. You know, these, mm-hmm. if you're submitting out of the submission period, you know, I hope you find a home for that work.
I do too.
I genuinely do. You know, as someone who is invested in seeing you succeed, I hope you succeed. But I also hope that you come back during our open submissions period and submit stuff to us. You know, I'm always really excited to read stuff. And one of the things that I thought was really cool about this anthology was, you know, being exposed to some writers that I'd never heard of before. You know, some who are just starting, and as of this moment in time, it's like I've read everything they've ever published.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me, but also really exciting because I believe that the 15 voices we have in our anthology especially, I believe there is a really great, you know, kind of burgeoning career for them as fiction writers. If they continue to do that, you know, if they continue to kind of put in the work for their craft and continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exciting to be a part of that, you know, kind of pivotal moment for someone.
The one thing
really
I want to address, and I don't want to get too deep into, is this idea of being able to pay authors. Like, it's a conversation Trevor and I had about paying authors what they're worth. And, you know, right now we're offering $25, and that doesn't seem like a lot. I'm not going to mention specifically, but I will say we've seen sources out there that call such publishers that offer $25 predatory.
Yeah, so I mean, to kind of back it up a little bit, because this is part of a much larger
I didn't know how much we wanted to get into this on the podcast.
I do want to get into it in the podcast, but I do want to frame this conversation very carefully.
Yeah, let's frame it carefully.
So one of the things that I wanted to talk about is just areas of growth, right? Like, what is it that we're doing now and how can we continue to improve into the future? And one of the conversations we've been having as a lot of the writing sphere and a lot of, I think just the political moment of right now is mm-hmm. talking about what is the value of labor, right? And what is the value of a product that you produce, you know, based on that labor? And specifically in the social media realm, right, there are a lot of artists and laborers who are talking about the value of their labor and being taken advantage of by, you know, the people who would seek to profit from their art.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really difficult to kind of have a conversation about some of this stuff because there are so many different, like, components that are kind of obscure to you on the other side of the fence. Most publishers, especially most small publishers, are not going to talk numbers with you.
Yeah.
They will not share any of the level of their success. And part of that, you know, might be marketing strategy. You know, for example, there's a company that produces role-playing games. I reached out to them years ago to try to get numbers on, like, how are you selling? Just to talk about, like, the market for role-playing games. And you know, we were in this moment, this, like, golden age moment of people who are doing tabletop gaming.
Yeah.
And they refused, you know, because they, and they said, you know, we're just a really small publisher. And I believe that they're a small publisher, but I also believe that they have a lot more money than they're talking about, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So yeah. The idea of them being a small publisher is part of their brand. It's part of what makes them marketable.
Right.
And I think if anyone actually uncovered how much money they do make on products, they would probably, like, lose some of that mystique of being the small guy, right? Mm-hmm.
No, we're not just branding ourselves as a small publisher. We really are small.
Like, no, yeah.
To pay our publishers, I had to walk down Dixon Street and gather up loose change on a Sunday morning.
Right, yeah.
After, like, the bars had emptied out
I've
from Saturday night.
I've been there with the metal detector and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, look, I totally believe authors should be paid pro rates.
Yeah, and this is kind of where we're getting to, right? Like,
let's discuss real quick.
There are a lot of publishers out there that will eat your lunch.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that it's important to note, like, most publishers do not go out and just publish something with the expectation of losing money.
Yeah.
And we had a long conversation, even as we were starting this publishing company, as Jeremy was you know, getting his bankroll from the Slay Brothers. We were, you know, like, talking about how were we going to basically make this company work. And it was very important that we not, you know, go into debt over this, that everything, you know, had to be kind of paid for up front, that we weren't going to go to a bank.
It's going to be self-sufficient at some point. It's going to be...
Exactly.
It's going to be able to fund itself and pay off itself and then still see a profit. And we're just, because we're brand new, we're not there yet.
Right.
Pro rates right now for a published author, for a short story are, HWA recognizes 5 cents a word, and I think pro markets pay up to like 8 cents a word.
Yeah.
Which
is kind of the minimum, right?
It's kind of the minimum, because if you think about that, if you spend a month or say a week crafting a short story, or a few days even, but then you spend a month working on revisions and editings, you've potentially put in at least dozens, if not hundreds of hours into this particular short story.
Yeah.
And you break that down to $25 from a publisher. That's like, that's not even
a cent
an hour or something. It's like really, like, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And even if you do pro rates, like if you break down pro rates to that many hours, like you're still
it's still not a whole lot.
Yeah.
But you know, there's this question again on the other side of the spectrum. It's like, we would love to be able to pay professional rates to people, but that would mean that, you know, in some cases, you know, when someone sends us a 20-page story or something like that, the cost for that individual story is more than our budget for the entire anthology itself. And if we can't guarantee that we're going to be able to recoup the money that we put forward in trying to publish that...
I mean, a 5,000-word short story at 5 cents a word is what, $250?
I'm not going to do the mental math right now.
I tried the mental math. We all can laugh and snicker and see how I failed.
I think that's that.
We all have also cell phones in front of us, and not, you know, which makes mental math like obsolete nowadays. But you know,
but that would require me to move my thumbs.
Yeah, that requires energy, and I just don't have the kinetic energy to pick up my phone and do the real math.
That's $250.
Is it $250? Okay, so my rant is moot
because validated.
So $250, I mean, that could be what we pay editors. We pay like double that, and you're paying the cover designer. So let's get transparent for a minute on, if I turn around and sell, and I'm selling this anthology for $14.99, a lot of people out there, and I probably at one point, you know, not being necessarily business-minded, would have had a similar kind of idea, or just not a clear picture of how this would break down, is that the publisher is pocketing most of that $14.99. And that's not the truth. Okay, first
not
off.
Not for a small publisher.
Not now, for a small publisher.
If you owned your own print.
You have to have an offset digital press to be able to print these books. And those presses are thousands upon thousands of dollars. And you have to have
tens of thousands of dollars.
At least. I mean, I've seen them upwards of $500,000. Yeah. So for all the printing equipment. Plus, you have to have the space to store all that equipment. So as a small press, I don't have access to that kind of equipment. Right. I hope to someday because that could really cut into the bottom line.
Yeah.
But as of right now, it's a pipe dream. I don't have it. So I have to rely on Amazon and Ingram Spark to print our work. Now, first off, Ingram Spark distributes to most of the bookstores, including Barnes & Noble. But in order to get into most of the bookstores, including Barnes & Noble, you have to offer anywhere from a 45% to a 55% wholesale discount to the bookseller, which means if I'm selling that book at $14.99 and Barnes & Noble wants to pick it up to put it in their store, they're paying me $7, or they're paying the Ingram Spark $7 for it right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means my royalty, what I get as a compensation, is automatically cut in half, right? Then I've got to pay them to print the book because I don't have my own printer. I have to pay them to distribute the book. And you'd think, wow, you got to pay for distribution too? Yeah, you got to pay for distribution too, which can be upwards of 40 cents. I can get a publisher's compensation off a trade paperback. $14.99 retail price, my publisher's compensation could be as low as $1.80.
Yeah.
That's what I see off of each copy sold. So what we have to talk about, what we have to understand when we're talking about paying author pro rates, is we have to talk about this idea of marketability. Are you going to, as an author, sell with your names, help me sell enough copies that we could recoup the cost of paying author pro rates, help recoup the cost of the cover design, of the printing, of the distribution, of all of that.
Editing time.
Yeah, editing time into it. Are you going to, is your name going to be enough to help me recoup that cost so that I can justify the pro rates?
Right.
And while I would love that to be the case, the truth is, for most authors, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
it isn't going to happen,
and that's not to say that we don't have faith in that product, but
we absolutely do.
I mean, we really have struggled as we think about, you know, what are the ethics of opening a, you know, a small press? What are the ethics of working with authors and knowing that we can't compensate them, you know, professional rates, but we're still hoping to turn, you know, some kind of profit on their work, and what is the fairness in how we share that profit with an author? We've gone back and forth, you know, thinking about different options. And while
I think we might have one, I think we might have a solution where
we don't want to commit to saying anything on the air that may not end up working out in the way that we want.
But potentially we have a solution that addresses both of these ideas.
And I think the message that we really want to send and be very clear about is that we hear those voices who are very critical and cynical about this. Whole industry, right? And we want to make it clear, like, we are not here to eat your lunch. You know, we are here to share our lunch with you, you know, be part of this community with you. And hopefully...
Trevor doesn't like mashed potatoes. You can have his mashed potatoes.
My body tells you that's a filthy lie. I am for sure a mashed potato guy.
I prefer regular stuffing, so you can have part of my cornbread stuffing.
Yeah.
No, we're going to share our lunch with you.
The lunch
being leftover Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
Which is pretty old by now.
Yeah. Several
we're happy to share as much of that as you want. We just got to clean out the fridge.
Yeah. No, very well and truly, we wish to be a part of this community. We want you to be a part of our vision.
Authors and writers, like, we're thinking about these things too. We're not just a publisher thinking, how am I going to make so much money? I mean, I am interested in making a lot of money, but I'm also thinking about how to celebrate the authors' voices, because I'm an author first and foremost, and that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I want to change the industry. I want to force every other publishing house to think like we're thinking.
At least the small presses, you know.
At least
the big presses would be great for us to get to the cultural capital to be able to do that.
Like, the big presses need to more than anybody. Like, they can afford to pay these things better than we can.
For now, though, I think... You know, coming back to like this talk about like what are our areas of growth for the future? You know, as we think as a publisher, as we think as a podcast, you know, one of the things that we really wanted to do is to, you know, note areas of growth. author compensation is an area of growth for us. So we want to think about what are some creative options for us to be a part of this author community and say, we value authors, we value authors' voices, we value the labor that you put in, and we wish to find a more equitable way of sharing with you, you know, the profit of your work.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a conversation.
It is going to be, it's like, an ongoing conversation. It is an area of growth. We are not there yet. We hope to be there soon, but we also know that we only get there so long as people are willing to come in with us and build this together, right? To create this project. And I am very hopeful from the individuals that we interacted with, especially with this anthology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am hopeful that we will get there. You know, and I think that soon be the day when we are able to outshine, you know, professional rates, and we can really, you know, kind of roll out the red carpet for people.
And
honestly, seeing
our growth, and I know I didn't want to overstate our growth, obviously, over the past, but we've really only, we haven't been in business even a year, and mm-hmm. we've seen some very, very obvious growth.
Very hopeful trends.
Very hopeful trends. And I'm very optimistic going into 2022, especially as another area of growth for me. I see that we streamline some of these ideas. Like when we do these calls for submissions, we can streamline some of our practices to maybe mm-hmm. not let it feel so hectic.
Yeah.
And same thing, streamline like our production schedule for the podcast so that it doesn't feel so erratic. And
some other stuff, you know, like increase our professional presence in a lot of communities. You know,
I'm going to be at StokerCon.
Trying to correspond a lot more in social media.
I'm going
to
be at StokerCon by myself, which means no filter to keep me from telling as many bad puns and throwing my coworkers under the bus because they aren't there to defend themselves.
I mean, StokerCon was a big deal. We are also trying to you know, find ways to be more active in like the Horror Writers Association, you know, kind of join some more of these genre associations, be really proactive about championing a lot of our authors and collaborators in, you know, genre circles or literary award circles, you know, mm-hmm. like we really are trying to find new ways to, you know, kind of be champions of for our collaborators and to be more a part of the community that they, you know, interact in.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the first conversations we ever had, we were talking about doing this kind of anthology idea. And I think the idea of, especially like Trevor and some other people I was mentioning this to, were asking about like, oh, so you're going to do a lit magazine. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do, because lit magazines are like monthly or bi-monthly or something. I don't want that. I want quality over quantity. So I'd rather do one anthology a year that has the strongest stories in it than do a lit mag with potentially some lower quality stories.
And I have, you know, I am a frequent anthology reader. I'm the kind of guy who just like I voraciously consume as much as I can. And I honestly think that this anthology, Tales of Slay House 2021. let's not talk about that. Tales of Slay House 2021 is just a fantastic anthology. There are some stories in there that I truly believe are some of the coolest stories I've read mm-hmm. this year. And
there are
very
some that are going to really, it's going to earn its horror badge.
There are a couple that I think are really going to go the distance. They are some real bang for your buck.
Yeah. So,
you know, those are some areas of growth for us as a publisher. What were some of our top moments of the year, just personally? Top moments.
Curtis, why don't you chime in on this?
Oh, top moments of the year. Oh. You know, the first thing we did was Old, right?
Yeah.
That was just hilarious. That kind of like... That stood out in my mind because I could tell how this what the vibe was going to be from that point. And so I got from right then, I got really excited. I thought it was just so funny hearing you guys rip on that dude. Shyamalan.
Yeah. Shyamalan.
Shyamalan Ding Dong. Shyamalan Ding Dong.
Yeah. I listened to that one.
Comedy Gold.
Just several
paying
times
off
over.
15 episodes later.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like the growth of the podcast. I like the... I mean, the old was definitely a trendsetter, but then we started figuring out how to balance like the script and then our just riffing off each other. And then adding Curtis as a third voice, which I always kind of thought
there's so much to mention.
A lot more banter with three people on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So much banter, sometimes you don't even know what the subject of the episode's about.
I know.
If you don't look at the title and read the episode description, you're like, what the fuck are these guys even talking about?
I feel like, you know, from the podcast perspective, I don't know if anything will top Star Wars Update 1995.
Enjoyed that. That was really fun.
I've listened to that. I was there to record that episode, and I've re-listened to it like 12 times.
It was really funny.
I had such a blast putting that together. And as I look back on the year, I don't know. There have been some real moments for me, not just in the podcast, but I think that has brought a lot of joy to my existence. 2021 for me was like the year of the burnout. I am just so exhausted. You know, I've been working two jobs for I don't know, as long as I can remember, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in grad school, I was holding down two jobs. And now that I'm here, I'm still working two jobs. You know, I work my 8 to 5, and then I've got another side gig, and this was like the third side gig, and then editing the book was a fourth side gig.
So you've had more than two jobs.
It's just been so much labor and a year of being very labor intensive. Mm. But as we moved into kind of finding our voice for the podcast, I found that doing this was much more reinvigorating to me. And then, you know, doing the anthology, like actually editing that anthology and working with different authors to kind of...
I think
of,
that was yours and Karen's both your first times working on or
on
editing
an anthology like
anthology.
This, yeah.
I did it some in grad school, but...
And I'm no stranger to helping people edit work. You know, I've been doing that for the last decade.
One might argue that's all we do as English instructors.
Almost all we do. But no, I found that again, it was kind of a source of joy for me. And even though sometimes it was kind of laborious, it was really fulfilling work. And seeing the end product, you know, at the end of several revisions in some case, was really amazing because it's like the work really transforms and comes into its own. And I think all of that for me was the highlight of the year, just like finding, working through that burnout and finding something to keep working for in a time that I really just did not want to put in more labor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your next question, Trevor, on here, Trevor did our outline for today.
I tried my hardest.
He did. This is a very, I don't know.
Introspective. It's a very introspective question.
So go ahead and ask the question, and I will answer, and then you all
so, I mean, what did we learn about ourselves in this year through this process?
That I'm good enough, and I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me.
Gosh darn it, that is true.
No, they don't. Our producer looks at me and goes, no, they don't. No, they don't. They tolerate you at best. You're an amusement. You're an amusement. But you've already worn thin today, so we're kicking you out of the podcast for the rest of the episode. I'm under arrest, people. I'm under house arrest, so I got to shut up now.
Yeah, he's got a really messy situation.
His
room monocled and bound.
if you hear the sirens outside, that's the cops showing up.
He's always.
He's broken his house arrest.
Always with this guy.
Yeah. Jeremy, tell us, like, what did you learn about yourself through this process?
I learned that I enjoyed this side of business more than I thought I would. I knew I wanted to get into the publishing because I liked words and I liked the art, and I liked the craft and I liked all of that. I was scared because I've never taken like a business course. My mind isn't oriented that way in like a business fashion, but I feel like being handed the reins to this publishing house and being able to do this with yours and Karen's help, obviously, and Curtis and Les's help, obviously, mm-hmm. for the podcast side of things. I feel like I was so anxious about, is this something I could actually do and be successful at? And I feel like what I've learned about myself is that I potentially can. I mean, with the right people in your corner, and that's why I will never stop thanking everybody in this room and everybody who's helped, like, because you guys have all been amazing. I feel like with the right people in your corner, you can accomplish these sorts of things. So I'm really, really happy with the way the year's turned out and satisfied.
How about you, Curtis?
I agree with what Jeremy said, and that's
a way to glow under my argument there. What I learned
is that this is a room full of people with varied interests, and just knowing the things that I know and the things I'm good at, I wouldn't have guessed that I would overlap with you guys.
Yeah.
But that's been the coolest part, is just seeing how the overlap has happened and how natural it is. You know, I do music and audio and all that stuff, and then, you know, getting in with you guys, I've learned a lot of stuff. My vocabulary is expanded, and that's been the coolest part, is just seeing what kind of conversations come out of people when they just get in a room and start talking.
I think for me, you know, one of the things I really learned is just understanding that, first off, you know, my personal limitations of what I can and cannot afford to sign up for. You know, I think this year, especially as I faced my burnout, I became much more comfortable with telling people no.
there it is.
Yeah.
And what an important life skill.
I think there is real value in that, right? And just being like,
Trevor giving me his resignation letter.
No. Like, quite the contrary. I think in being able to say no to more things, I've also been able to dedicate more time, more of myself to the things that I genuinely love. And I've found a lot more energy and a lot more passion in that avenue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This year, I read more stuff than I've ever read in any other year. And I don't think that's just a
Star Wars
stuff. It was just Star Wars.
Sadly, it was mostly Star Wars stuff. No, I actually did read some really, really good stuff that wasn't Star Wars. I did read a whole fuck ton of Star Wars, but...
you read this other series called Planet Battles? Totally different.
Totally different. It's got a different cast. It's got Buchaka and Sean Hollow.
Yeah. and Mike Cloudhopper.
Yeah. Who can forget Mike Cloudhopper?
Mike. What?
Next year, he's going to read Galaxy Scrimmages.
No, what really is kind of sad and pathetic was that as I got through more and more Star Wars stuff, I was like, I wonder if there's a Star Trek literary universe.
And there is.
And I found out that there's like 800 fucking Star Trek books, too.
You better get hopping, bud.
oh, man. Not going to do
Star
it.
Trek,
not gonna
Star
do
Trek
it.
1975 isn't going to happen by itself.
You know, therein is another lesson. I'm just going to throw that out. Like, as much as I thought that, you know, I was doing the Star Wars thing kind of ironically, like, it unironically turned into a much greater passion for me than I thought it would. I found so much more joy in the things that I thought I would, you know, that I had just dismissed because I didn't think it was something that I would have enjoyed at all.
Right.
And I think that, you know, Star Wars Update 1995 is the result of me finding so much more joy in something I felt was just going to be, you know, like a waste of time.
That came, in the episode that came across, I think, to me and to the listener, like, because I was like, man, I'm going to be sitting there not saying much the whole time.
Yeah. No.
I don't know what this dude's going to be talking about. And then it turned out to be like just this fun.
It was so much fun. And I can't wait for the next one. You know, I can't wait to keep doing this because I think that for me, it really was just a very enjoyable time.
I don't know anybody that's really into Star Wars personally. And so for them to listen to that whole thing without any interest in Star Wars, that really said something to me. I was like, wow, that was really good.
Yeah, I feel like so my brother, when he was dating his wife, she kept noticing that he had like Star Wars stuff all over the place. And she was like, like, you're really into Star Wars, are you? Aren't you? And he was like, no, I wouldn't really say I'm very into Star Wars. And she's like, but you're wearing Stormtrooper socks, and I see Stormtroopers over there, and you've got a Darth Vader, you know, bust, and you've got like these posters of the old Star Wars movies. And he's like, you know what? Maybe I am a bigger fan than I thought I was.
Yeah, I am.
And I think that's what's happened with me. You know, I've been like, I'm not really that into Star Wars. And then I look at all of the Star Wars shit that I have.
It just infiltrates your life. And then one day you look around your bedroom and you're like, realize that you're running
the same thing happened
museum.
With Spider-Man with me. You know, I was like, I don't know. Spider-Man's kind of okay. And then I really thought of how much of my life I've invested in Spider-Man. And I'm just like, wow. Like, I really am lowballing myself on that Spider-Man stuff.
I mean, you could have gone on that Caribbean vacation. But for all the merchandise.
No, probably.
They do a Spider-Man cruise?
Yeah.
Spider-Man cruise. Could take a Spider-Man cruise.
I've been entering myself in a sweepstakes to go on the Star Wars Galaxy cruise. Like, it's intense. I'm not going to win it, but
what
I
does that
still
ship
want
look
to.
Like?
I don't know.
Do they deck it out with
X-Wing fighters? They've got cosplay actors in there dressed as like Twi'leks and shit. And I'm like, I'm fucking there. Like, you don't have to, you know, you tell me like, hey, there's like a Star Wars getaway. I'm like, fucking, I'll go.
A Star Wars getaway?
I'll do it.
Both of those things are perfect sounding.
I really hope they just pipe jizz through the speakers.
Right into your ears.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be there.
For anybody who missed the Star Wars episode,
go back and listen to that episode. Yeah. It's gold. So what are some personal goals for 2022? I mean, as we close out, I don't want to say like a New Year's resolution or something like that, because I think those are cheap and they're just kind of stupid. But like, personal goals, I think reframing instead of like a resolution, like I'm going to do this thing consistently. It's more like, what do you hope to accomplish in the next year? As we look forward into 2022, what are some personal goals, and then maybe some like professional goals that you hope to accomplish?
A push-up.
A push-up? Yeah. That's a good goal.
With the correct form, you know?
With the proper form, yeah.
Proper form push-up.
You know what? Yeah. That's harder to do.
It really is.
When you look like us, that's harder to do than you think.
For 2025, I plan to be able to do a pull-up by then.
There you go.
I'm starting with a push-up.
Five-year plan, your five-year mission.
I don't know. To get through this Dracula series, I think, in January is probably the first. Because it's a really, I think, so like the audience is like, they don't realize that the guys in here with me, they don't know all of the research that I've done. I've hinted at the books that I've been reading to do this series correctly, but they don't know all of the research that I've done to present this series, and they're going to see it in time of recording probably next week.
I know the amount of research.
Like, you know, yeah. But so I feel like it's a pretty large task to try and tackle, and I'm really, really excited about it, but I want it to be a good quality product.
I feel like the Dracula series is really your Star Wars update, 1994.
I think it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four very long episodes. Not very long.
I don't think they're very long. I think they're fun.
They'll be,
The one that we've already recorded, I had a blast with.
Yeah.
And then I'm really looking forward to
it. With my Wikipedia style, style scripting.
Thank God the scripts have changed.
So that, and like I said, streamlining the publishing house day-to-day stuff so that we have a better system to manage like these submissions and these ideas, because I think we're just going to keep growing and growing. Yeah. And I want us to, but I also want us to do it responsibly so that we can control it and we don't get overwhelmed and then it crushes us. And because that could be a very real possibility. Like, and I don't want that to happen to any of us.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think... Definitely looking forward to that submission process. I know you're also looking forward to StokerCon.
I am.
That's a really big accomplishment that we've been talking about, you know, kind of planning for how are we going to do StokerCon.
The plan right now is for my wife and my dog to go with us. And,
I really wish
to go with me.
And I really wish I could go. Unfortunately, I have some professional obligations I have to attend to. That's the only reason I'm not going to be there. I'm there in spirit, though.
I know you are, man. I know you are. I would love, like, if Curtis and his family were able to go. I know Les is going to be out of the country then, but if Curtis was able to go, I would love to do that. I'd love to figure out a way, maybe even if Curtis couldn't, that we could set up like a kind of remote podcast kind of thing and do like a live from StokerCon kind of podcast episode. I think that'd be really cool.
You could put me on an iPad and I'll Zoom, and then you could stick the iPad to a robot.
Yes.
I will control the robot from here.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice Love virtual it. Presence.
Yeah. It was we just solved a real problem there.
I just ripped off South Park.
Yeah.
By the way. And Big Bang Theory too,
Big Bang
I think.
Theory.
And
Big Bang Theory, yeah. How about you, Curtis? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to, expanding the capabilities of this studio, and I really look forward to incorporating more of that into what you guys are doing.
It's awesome.
But yeah,
I think my personal goals, doing this anthology was really a lot of fun for me, and I think it also animated me a lot more to write my own fiction, because I realized I do have a lot of ideas that I've been kicking around for a long time, but not had really a lot of confidence in testing out, I kind of set an arbitrary goal, but I wanted to get two pieces of fiction published before. I've published some nonfiction in the past. I've been a part of some different literary projects, but I've never really done kind of my own thing and really let my own voice out there. And so part of the process of doing this anthology really gave me a lot more confidence, because I saw that, a lot of people made those submissions, and not to say that, I believe my work could be better or something like that. It was just like I see now that I think there is a process
right
out there, and that I shouldn't be afraid of this process, because it is a lot more accommodating maybe than I thought it was.
Right, right.
And my hope is to publish more of my own fiction, something that I've shied away from doing. And I also just, for 2022, I want to seek out more of that joy that I felt, especially at the end of this year, finding that balance between the professional labor that I have to do, but also finding the things that animate me and can kind of rejuvenate my interests in being a person and in being a part of a community. I found that those things really do give me a whole lot more joy. And I need to be dedicating more of myself and more time to finding the joy than just, working through the labor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And coming off of this old world of these mega publishers and this huge industry that, right, like you said, eats your lunch at every single opportunity,
right,
they waste no time taking everything from you.
Yeah.
Now is a time where, it's going to be hard to relax into your, because the reason it was so stressful before is because of those guys, and the stakes are so high, and it's so much work for such little return. That type of stress is not good for artists. And I feel like we're coming into an era where artists can really just focus on what it is they want to do.
Yeah.
And then just put their heart into that, and then, we'll get it published.
Well,
there are ways to manage those types of things now without having to sell it all, give it all away,
Yeah. Well, and I think,
thank God,
as a publishing house, I don't want to speak for all of Slay House, but I do think, one of our professional missions, especially for 2022, is just to collaborate with people and to basically, be the kind of people who are invested in your success.
Yeah.
You find
the
people. You can
speak for all of Slay House for that. That's
fine. Find the people who are going to advocate for you, but also to be the people who advocate, right?
Yeah,
right.
To collaborate and advocate. That is a really big thing for me is I in the field that I work in, rather unfortunately, I don't run into a whole lot of people who are willing to advocate.
Yeah.
And so if I want to solve that problem, I have to be part of that solution.
It's the competition, right?
There's a lot of, especially in my field, I just feel like there's a lot of people who are only really invested in finding their personal path to success and not necessarily in how do I advocate for you? How do I grow you?
Let's be clear about that, because I too, professionally, self-professionally speaking, not outside of Slay House, I want to continue writing, and I want to find my own publishing, and I want to, you know, see my stuff published, and I want to advocate for my own success. But it's not an either or thing. You can totally be out to better yourself and still take that time to help other people. And so that's what we want Slay House to do, is to be an advocate for those other people while we're realizing our own goals too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, that is definitely a professional goal. You know, find the people who are going to advocate you, but also be the advocates that you would like to encounter for your own project.
There's been a lot of crummy things that have come from the, you know, the social media era that we're living in. But one of the good things is that it does make that easier. It makes it easier to find your group. I don't know. We're getting more connected, way more connected every day, and it's just going to get over the next year or two. It's the connectivity between artists, producers, creators, it's going to be really intense.
Yeah.
You know, we got to give up the idea, though, that it's me and my ideas and I'm going to make it. You know, it's time for us to start kind of getting together on things.
Yeah.
Because projects are better when there are teams involved, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You know, there's no big production that came out of that you saw in a movie theater that wasn't a team of hundreds, maybe even thousands of people.
I would argue the same thing even within the confines of publishing, like a book. I mean, writing is a solitary business, but publishing is a community effort. And
it's kind of like Karen said in her episode, you know, like you need to have the hand counter, right?
Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, that's
the end of the episode.
That's
right?
The end of the episode, guys. That's
the year in review.
We're gonna keep saying it like that to try and get you.
We really need to enunciate.
We're gonna. It's the year in review, and we're gonna keep saying it like that to piss you off. See, we got to end. We've been so serious the past few minutes. I've got to tell a pun, even if it's bad, just to get that reaction.
Find a better pun.
Yeah. No pee jokes.
We
man.
Need some setups. For sure.
All right.
Listen, if you're at home listening to us still this deep into the
episode. If you haven't turned us off yet.
Yeah. I hope that you have a chance to reflect on your 2021. Share with us some of the highlights of your year. We're on Twitter at Slay House. We're also Slay House Litbit on Twitter. You can also reach out to us at editor@slayhouse.com if you would like to send us any fan mail. We haven't done a fan mail read in a little bit of time, but we'd love to hear from you. And also just, you know, take a moment to appreciate the people in your life that helped you get through 2021. And take a moment to look forward to 2022. I think it's going to be a great year.
Yep, I agree.